This is KFSK's Midday Magazine for December the 1st. I'm Angela Denning. A Catholic priest who serves parishes here in Petersburg and in Wrangell has suffered a life-threatening heart attack. Thomas Weiss, age 49, was hospitalized the evening before Thanksgiving while visiting family in Southern California. Michael Monagle is the business manager of the Catholic Diocese of Juneau, which includes all of Southeast Alaska.
He's currently in the hospital and is undergoing treatment. About the most I can say is that his prognosis at this point is guarded, but he is showing some improvement.
Weiss was ordained in the diocese in 2002. He served in Juneau, as well as Petersburg and Wrangell. Monagle says Weiss timed flights and ferry trips so he could celebrate Mass in both towns on the same Sunday. He also drew notice by kayaking between the two small cities.
He's a real outdoor enthusiast, hiking, kayaking. He really loves serving in those communities and getting out in the outdoors.
Monagle says Weiss also took up carpentry and worked on renovating aging church buildings. The diocese and churches are asking for prayers for Weiss, known to many as Father Thomas, and his family. Updates are being posted on the Diocese of Juneau's Facebook page. You can also find that link on our website, kfsk.org. We've also posted links to stories about his carpentry work and month-long vow of silence. Juneau's newly elected mayor was found dead in his home Monday afternoon. Greg Fisk was 70 years old. His cause of death is still unknown. City meetings scheduled for last night were canceled. As Juneau police investigated the scene, Fisk's neighbors in Star Hill lit candles in his honor. KTO's Lisa Fu has more from Juneau.
The Juneau Police Department received a 911 call reporting the discovery of Mayor Greg Fisk's body around 3:30 Monday afternoon. The call was made by the mayor's son, Ian Fisk. Police blocked off a part of Kennedy Street and searched in and around Fisk's home throughout the evening. Chief Bryce Johnson said the investigation will continue Tuesday morning.
We're documenting the residents about where everything is, exactly how things are placed, any evidence that may be in there as to what could have caused the death.
Rumors circulated Monday night that Fisk may have been assaulted. Johnson said other plausible theories also exist, like a fall or a heart attack. There didn't appear to be a break-in at Fisk's house or suspicion of suicide. Just after 9 p.m., Kennedy Street was reopened and Fisk's body was taken from his home. It'll be sent to the state medical examiner's office in Anchorage for an autopsy. Johnson said it's unknown how long Fisk had been dead before he was found. He confirmed people were unable to contact Fisk Monday morning, which prompted his son Ian to check on him.
It's a great loss for the community, so we want to make sure that we can tell the community what happened. And that's our job, and I think the community deserves to know what happened and have it investigated properly. So all the rumors out there are speculation right now, and as soon as we know, we'll let everyone else know.
Assemblymember and Deputy Mayor Mary Becker said she last spoke with Fisk on the phone Sunday. She said he had planned to be absent from the assembly meeting scheduled for Monday night and had asked her to lead it.
We just generally talked briefly about what was happening on the agenda, and that was it. He was very upbeat and sounded just like Greg.
Becker said Fisk was an easy person to work with and had been building a cohesive team with the assembly.
We're all in this kind of sadness together, and we will make it through, and the city will continue to run. We have a wonderful staff, an assembly that works well together, and we'll continue to do what we need to do.
Becker is responsible for mayoral duties for now. Juneau City Attorney will determine what happens next. Fisk was admired for being a limitless source of ideas. Here's Assemblymember Jesse Keel.
The way he jumped in to work on things made you want to work on them harder than you were before, and really, really inspired you to go after it.
Fisk had a long history of working on land claim settlements for Alaska Natives and First Nations communities in Canada. He graduated from Indiana University in 1971 with a degree in economic and cultural geography. The following year, he was working on the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. He later worked as a negotiator on Canada's first Aboriginal land claim settlement since the 1920s. In 1981, Fisk returned to Alaska to work for the state on land management policy. He eventually transitioned into consulting on fisheries policy in Alaska and Quebec. Fisk recently gave welcoming remarks at the Sharing Our Knowledge Tlingit Tribes and Clans Conference in Juneau.
It feels very, very odd to welcome you, because it's really you who are welcoming me. I've been here half my life, but that's just a twinkling in the eye of in the long arc of time that people have lived on this land and navigated these waters. So really, I have to thank you for having me here to speak to you.
On Monday night, neighbors on Star Hill gathered in the street to remember Fisk. Fisheries historian Bob King was Fisk's next-door neighbor, good friend, and the chairman of his mayoral campaign. Fisk was elected as the city's mayor in October, beating incumbent Merrill Sanford by a margin of 2-1.
Just so sad that a person with so much promise, so many great ideas, would be snuffed so soon within his term as mayor.
Fisk was a commercial fisherman and owned Seafisk Consulting and Management.
Fish was very important to him, and the responsible management of that natural resource, which is incredibly controversial, but he would jump into that fray and always be involved.
As his next-door neighbor, King said he'll miss interacting with Fisk on a regular basis.
That image of him sitting in his window in his office, and he was always sitting there working, you know, it's just very, very sad that I won't be seeing that face in that window again.
Fisk leaves behind his son Ian and grandson Kai. With help from Jennifer Canfield and Mika Wilson, I'm Lisa Fu in Juneau.
A group of Petersburg High School students have been working on two 15-page science-based research papers. It's for the Alaska Tsunami Bowl, an academic competition in Seward at the end of February. I recently stopped into one of their after-school practices and have this story. The competition has a theme every year, and this year's is community resilience. Sophomore Helen Martin explains.
We're working on a research paper about the probability of a tsunami hitting Petersburg and how we would be able to bounce back from that and what we would do to make sure that everyone is safe before it happens.
She's in Team A. Team B is researching something else.
Or if we crash in China, and how would it affect us here?
That's Anders Christensen. He's a sophomore. Christensen and the others in the group recently traveled to Sitka for Whale Fest, which is a gathering of scientists throughout Southeast. The students heard lectures on things like climate change and sustainable ecosystems. There was also a quiz bowl.
So in quiz bowl, there's teams of four. They face off in ocean and science-related questions, and they have buzzers to buzz in.
Senior Chauncey Sandhoffer.
There's multiple choice, and then there's also written answers, written questions, and overall, it tests your science knowledge in certain topics and subjects.
This is Tucker Hagerman, also a senior.
The questions can range all the way from biology to chemistry through oceanography to the physical geography to all the way out into space.
And technology, real sciencey stuff. To prepare, the students have been practicing 2 days a week after school. Besides practice tests, they go over presentations on specific topics.
It was just the other week we did sponges and the anatomy of sponges and the different physiological parts to a sponge, such as sponge and spicules. And different.
I don't know what that is. What is that?
A spongin is the protein within a sponge, and the spicules are the silica skeleton of a sponge.
So Petersburg did well at the Sitka Quiz Bowl. The A team, named Ocean Motion, won three of its four matches. The B team won one of four. The B team is known as
suspiciously swanky Skyphozoans.
Joni Johnson is one of the coaches. She says all of the players pitched in.
Seems like in the past we've had one person that's dominated on the buzzer. And this time around, there are a lot more folks weighing in. It was pretty cool.
The Sitka Whale Fest is considered a scrimmage. The real competition is at the end of February in Seward, and that's where the research papers come in. The one on Petersburg Tsunami Preparedness Plan, and the other on a market crash affecting the local economy. Johnson says this year's theme, community resilience, is broader based than in the past.
It's really more about social economics or sociology than it is just a pure scientific question. At least for me anyways, it's kind of outside my comfort zone as a coach, but in that, and when you start talking about people and how people respond, it gets even messier.
I'm Kelsa Spurl. I'm a junior.
Spurl is on Team B, doing the market plan.
Right now we're researching, trying to narrow it down to just more Southeast Alaska. We started out just looking with exports to China and the numbers and prices, and now we're trying to narrow it down to how much money just from Alaska and how much fish is exported from Alaska to China. And then we can see, if China's market crashed, then how much that would affect Southeast Alaska and our fishing community.
So far, Team A has found that Petersburg is not very prepared for a tsunami. Again, Chauncey Sandhoffer.
Right now we're thinking that if a tsunami hit, it'd be super devastating. But there's also a very small risk of one hitting.
That's because of the geography and...
bathymetry?
Yep, bathymetry. Sophomore Marissa Nilsson says bathymetry is like a topographical map of the ocean floor. And at the Stikine Flats near Petersburg...
it looks flat, but it actually kind of shears off and gets pretty deep pretty fast. And that buildup right there could slump, and that would be an underwater avalanche, and that could cause water displacement, and the effect could be a tsunami.
That's not the only possible cause. It could be what happened a few years ago, when a plate boundary off the panhandle of Alaska jumped a little bit, caused an earthquake, and displaced water. Sophomore Julia Murph remembers that day.
We all blamed it on my little sister, because we thought she was, shaking the bed in the next room. And then my mom comes downstairs, and she's like, "There's a tsunami warning, we have to go." So we all packed up in the car, and put our dogs in the car, too, and grabbed the peanut butter and the wool blankets and the Harry Potter books, and went up to an elevation of 100 feet and read until they told us it was clear.
There wasn't a tsunami, but these students are looking at the what-if scenario. The research papers will be graded by experts, then each team will prepare a 20-minute oral presentation on their topic. This will be Tucker Hagerman's third year going to Seward. He says the key is preparation.
It's very important to make sure that every little kink gets smoothed out to have a perfect presentation. In some ways, yes, it is something to worry about, but also there's a lot of time and between now and then that we can put in a lot of effort and make sure that that gets done.
The Alaska Tsunami Bowl runs February 26th through the 28th in Seward. Last year, Matsu Career and Technical High School took first place, Cordova second, and Juneau Douglas third. In other news, Southeast Alaska marine scientists had a rare peek this year into the hatching of a species of squid. K2O's Matt Miller prepared this report on an experiment that recently wrapped up at a Juneau laboratory as part of an effort to culture and grow the tiny cephalopods.
So I've never seen it. In fact, I've never seen squid in Southeast, and I've been here since 1976. I worked for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, so I've never seen this before.
Gordon Garcia says the market squid eggs were found this past summer in a salmon capture device at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Little Port Walter Field Station. That's located on the eastern shore of the southern tip of Baranoff Island.
The squid actually spawned in the capture device, and our staff there grabbed some of them. We had asked that they actually send the live squid. That would have been something to have in our aquariums here, but they died quickly. So they ended up sending us the eggs, and they kept some eggs, we kept some eggs. Here's what you see. We see this massive squid hatching, and they're all attracted to the light.
Garcia is a facilities manager at NOAA's Ted Stevens Marine Research Institute in Ok Bay, but he says he has a biology background and occasionally gets to design or participate in various research projects. He showed us the tanks in the Institute's wet lab where they kept the egg masses and the tiny baby squid as they hatched and darted and swam about. Garcia called them squidlies. One early picture he took of the first hatchlings he named Squidnado because it resembled an underwater twister as the tiny squid swam up to a light. In one tank, he used ambient seawater of about 49 degrees Fahrenheit. In another tank, he warmed up the seawater up to about 61 degrees Fahrenheit. The warm water eggs started hatching first, but then died after about a week. The ambient seawater group hatched as much as 4 weeks after the warm water squid. Garcia says market squid typically live about a year and grow 8 to 10 inches long.
But they're not big enough to be consumed by humans. As
a oh, yeah. So, you could get those little calamari rings out of them.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Dice them up.
Oh. You're not pulling my leg on
it. No. I've seen them that big, little calamari rings that big, which is about the size of their bodies.
Garcia says at one point there were literally clouds of the little squidlies in the tanks. As many as 7,000 hatched over the course of the late summer and early fall.
They're just popping out as we're talking. I mean, you can see that cloud is getting denser and denser and denser.
How many do you think there are in there?
I have no idea. If I was to go shake these egg masses, I'd probably triple the number of critters that you see there. It's just nuts how many.
Garcia says he spent 3 months experimenting with the substrate in the tank, water flow, lighting, tank size and depth, and a variety of food sources. That was the trick, he says, getting the squid to eat. He tried salmon meal, rehydrated freeze-dried rotifers, or a form of zooplankton, and brine shrimp. Some of the cold water squid doubled in size after feeding on the brine shrimp, but the shrimp themselves did not thrive very well in that cold water.
I'm not sure what I'm going to do with them all. I'd hate to see them die, but that's nature, of course. And we'll take the strongest and see if we can't make them grow.
And sadly, despite Garcia's attempts to keep them alive, all of the little squid eventually perished. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
And I'm Angela Dunning. This wraps up KFSK's Midday Magazine. Thanks for listening.